In every election cycle, people bemoan the mudslinging in the political campaigns. With all this opposition to the idea, why do candidates continue to do it year after year? In our second story, Monica Udine, Jeremy Newman, and Omar Sadat find the answer. All that negative campaigning just might work, and just might be good for our democracy.
W. Bush, and I approve this message.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
Flip-flopper, incompetent, liberal. Enough already. Haven't we had all the politics we could ever want? In fact, I've had enough name-calling, finger-pointing, and mudslinging to last me a lifetime. How has this election made you feel about negative politics?
Negative campaigns are bad. Why? Because the true issues at hand get pushed aside.
No, when I see negative campaign, it's like, you know, don't vote for him, he's bad for children. I'm like, that's really mean, because people have said that about me before.
Okay, well, I hate negative ads, because I feel like you should seriously just promote your own, whatever you're advertising, instead of bashing other. Like, I really hate them.
People are tired of all the negativity, and I am too. Why does it have to be like this, anyway? Why do politicians have to attack each other all the time? On my TV? It makes me wonder, whatever happened to the time when people still respected the president, and when attack ads didn't saturate my television every election year? Whatever happened to the time when politics was honorable, when politicians had integrity, and relevant political discussion fueled our democracy? I went on a mission to find out, and what I discovered might surprise you. It was difficult to decide how far back I should go in my search for the golden age of politics. I decided to play it safe. I started as far back as I could, with two of our nation's founding fathers in the first ever contested presidential race. I knew I'd find a clean campaign full of ideas, not attacks. In 1796, the Federalist John Adams was running against the Republican Thomas Jefferson. It was two of the greatest American patriots in history, in a good, honest race against each other. Their signatures are on the Declaration of Independence. These men must have reeked integrity. The Federalists called Jefferson an atheist, anarchist, demagogue, coward, trickster, and a Franco-maniac. But the Republicans weren't left behind. They called Adams an avowed friend of monarchy who wanted to make his sons lords of this country. In 1800, Jefferson and Adams went at it again, and this time the attacks got even worse. A Federalist newspaper warned that if Jefferson won, people would see their dwellings in flames, hoary hairs bathed in blood, female chastity violated, and children riding on the pike and halberd. And in return, the Republicans spread a rumor that John Adams planned to marry his children to King George's children to reunite the United States and Britain. I was shocked. Just years after the birth of our democracy, this is what politics was like? There were plenty of accusations, but where was the actual discussion of the issues? The attacks on the candidates in 1800 were so bad that John Adams' wife Abigail thought that the abuse and scandal was enough to ruin and corrupt the minds and morals of the best people in the world. And this was with two of our founding fathers running against each other. Could I hope for anything better as time went on? Apparently not. When Andrew Jackson ran for president in 1828 against John Quincy Adams, Adams's supporters called Jackson's mother a prostitute, accusing her of having several illegitimate children with a mulatto man. Jackson was also accused of adultery, bigamy, theft, murder, and cockfighting. Meanwhile, John Quincy Adams was accused of procuring young American virgins for the Russian Tsar. And in the 1884 presidential election, Grover Cleveland's sex life was the hot issue. As a young man, Cleveland had had a relationship with a female employee in his law office. She wound up pregnant, a And although Cleveland supported his former mistress and bastard son financially, his opponent James Blaine publicly attacked Cleveland's morality. Blaine's supporters chanted, "Ma, Ma, where's my pa?" Which takes us to the end of the 19th century and to the end of my political idealism. I guess political attacks were as alive in the 1800s as they are today.
In the 19th century, American politics was just as negative as it is today, if not more so.
Stanford Communications and Political Science professor Shanto Iyengar.
But because the audience for that kind of rhetoric was so narrow, the people who were really active in the campaign, they didn't really have much impact. Television, of course, has changed everything, and now the entire public is receiving these messages. And that's why it seems to have this kind of off-putting effect.
But I don't understand. If the audience for attack ads is becoming more broad because of television, how is it that we don't hear the same kinds of attacks? We know Bush called Kerry a flip-flopper, sure, but that's not quite the same thing as calling his mother a whore. We don't hear the same types of attacks today as we did then, because negative campaigning has evolved since the 1800s, along with everything else. The tone of negative campaigns has changed since the advent of the television ad in the 1950s. Most TV attack ads present a specific argument about why a candidate's policies would be bad for the country or why he's unfit to lead. Considering our history, you'd think that would be a refreshing change. But what about my search for the golden age of political discourse? Where can we find a time when negative ads did more than just make wild accusations, when they actually discussed the issues and educated the voters? Surprisingly, that time is now. Believe it or not, but the vast majority of modern negative ads have been issue-oriented. I know what you're thinking. This goes against all of our intuitions about the evils of negative campaigning. And yet, according to University of Florida professor Linda Lee Cade, 74% of ads in the television era have focused on issues. That's actually a greater percentage than positive ads, of which 61% focus on issues. And negative ads are more than twice as likely as positive ads to use logical appeals. But what do these numbers really mean? Let's take a look at a couple of examples of early television ads from 1952.
Eisenhower answers America.
Food prices, clothing prices, income taxes, won't they ever go down?
Not with an $85 billion budget eating away on your grocery bill, your clothing, your food, your income. Yet the Democrats say, you never had it so good.
That negative ad discussed an important issue and gave a logical argument against the Democrats' budget. Compare that to this positive ad run by Eisenhower's opponent, Adlai Stevenson.
Vote Stevenson, vote Stevenson, a man you can believe in, son. From Illinois, whence Lincoln came, his leadership has won him fame. A soldier man is always bound to think in terms of battleground. But Stevenson, civilian son, will lead us till the peace is won.
In this case, the negative ad advanced discussion of the issues, while the positive ad didn't really say anything. It turns out, in the TV age, negative advertisements often inform the public about key issues and offer contrasting viewpoints to help them decide upon a candidate. That's just what happened in the 1984 campaign, which pitted Walter Mondale against incumbent Ronald Reagan. Reagan's policies had led to economic expansion, but also to record deficits. The future of the economy hung in the balance. Reagan attacked Mondale's economic policy in this ad.
Reaganomics. You cut deficits through growth and less government spending. Mondale-nomics, you raise taxes. With Reaganomics, you create incentives that move us all forward. With Mondale-nomics, you raise taxes.
It may have been blunt, but the ad was also true. Mondale did pledge to raise taxes as a centerpiece of his campaign. He shot back with this ad, visually comparing Reagan's economic policy to a roller coaster ride.
1982. Reaganomics plummets our economy into the deepest recession in 50 years. 2 years later, Ronald Reagan says the economy is moving up again. Of course it is. Up on a mountain of federal debt. A record federal deficit that will drive interest rates up, slow the economy down, and then... If you're thinking of voting for Ronald Reagan in 1984, just think of what'll happen in 1985.
These negative ads inform the public in a way positive ads could not. Because of the negative ads, voters knew not only the benefits of each candidate's economic policy, but also the pitfalls. America made its choice. We elected Reagan in a landslide, but those negative ads may have helped us make a more informed decision. John Kerry called the 2004 campaign the most negative in history, though if he knew what I know now, he might have had to eat his words. But even if it were true, even if this campaign was the most negative, would that be a bad thing? Let's take a look at a positive ad and then a negative ad from Kerry's own campaign, and you can judge which is more substantive.
He's a husband and father. A hunter, hockey player. Tough prosecutor, advocate for kids. A man of faith. A combat veteran who earned 3 Purple Hearts, risking his life to save others. 19 years, Senate Foreign Relations Committee, praised by former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff under Presidents Reagan and Clinton. Stronger at home, respected in the world. John Kerry for president.
Now that made you feel good, but does it make you smarter? Compare that to this negative ad, run by the Kerry campaign, which actually informs voters about the state of the economy.
Under George Bush and right-wing Republicans, we've lost 2.7 million manufacturing jobs, the worst jobs record since Herbert Hoover. New jobs pay $9,000 less. Healthcare costs skyrocket. Higher deductibles and co-pays. Gas prices soar. George Bush and right-wing Republicans give tax breaks for companies that export jobs. Handouts to Halliburton and Enron, but they put the squeeze on the middle class. It's time for a new direction.
Now, that's not to say that all negative ads are issues-oriented or logical, and it's true that not all positive ads are as fluffy as this one. Still, on the whole, it seems negative ads in the TV era have tended to be more informative. But you might say, so what? So what if negative advertisements had more information than we originally thought? That doesn't make them any less annoying. And besides, what are they doing for us now? Well, even today, negative ads continue to play the important role of watchdog, letting the public know about a candidate's shortcomings or scandals. Political scientist Robert Lowy said recently, "In the recent U.S. Senate race in Colorado, I would have never have learned that one of the candidates tried to put a medical incinerator in a minority neighborhood if it had not been for a good negative ad." Because of increased scrutiny on negative ad campaigns, in the TV age, negative ads are often forced to higher standards of factual accuracy than positive ads, and they're more likely to be remembered by potential voters. In an August 18, 2004 segment of National Public Radio's Day Today, University of Wisconsin professor Ken Goldstein further discusses the merits of negative campaigns.
My research and the research of other scholars has shown that negative ads are actually factually more accurate than positive ads. Also, that negative ads are more likely to talk about policy. And my research has shown that voters are not demobilized by negative ads, but are mobilized by negative ads.
It turns out that new studies are showing a link between negative ads and higher voter turnout. An analysis by political scientists Stephen Finkel and John Geer shows that since 1960, turnout has intended to increase in presidential elections when a greater percent of campaign ads were negative. And according to a study at the University of California, Irvine, people who didn't vote in the 1988 election were more likely to vote in the next election if they remembered seeing negative ads than if they didn't. But how can that be? We always hear about how attack ads are angering the public and driving them away from the polls. How can negative ads actually increase turnout? According to political scientist Paul Martin, negative ads tend to discuss problems in America, and when people see problems with the country, it inspires a sense of civic duty, which makes them more likely to participate in politics. So, sick at the state of politics today, I abandoned it all and started off on a mission to find a time where I wouldn't have to listen to silly attacks and mudslinging. But even the furthest back I could go, I couldn't escape them. Negative ads were absolutely everywhere. And then it turned out that that wasn't such a bad thing. The television age brought negative campaigning to a huge new audience, and ironically, negative ads began to become less about flat-out insulting the other candidate and more about showing the voters what the candidate was doing wrong. And despite the fact that it seems like everyone claims to be sick of all the negativity, the fact is that in the TV era, studies show a link between the rate of negative advertising and increased voter turnout. And the more memorable they are, the more people seem to think about them and talk about them afterward. In my mission to find the day when democracy seemed to function in a better way, what more could I have asked for?
Monica Udine, Jeremy Newman, and Omar Sadat are recent Stanford graduates.